Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to AXA's full year 2018 results. A warm welcome to those of you on the phone, on the webcast, and of course, those of you here in London. We're joined here in the room by a number in our management team, by our CEO, Thomas Buberl, by our Deputy CEO and CFO, Gilles Dardin. We also have our CEO for France, Jacques de Peretti. Our CEO for AXA in Europe is here, Antimo Perretta. Our CEO for AXA XL, Greg Hendricks, and our Group Chief Risk Officer, Alban de Mailly Nesle. Welcome to you all. With all of these people present, I'm hoping we'll be able to answer clearly and thoroughly all the various questions you may have on the results. As per usual, the Q&A session will be at the end of the presentation, and we'll be happy to take questions from those of you on the phone or on the webcast. Please just follow the instructions you've been given. We will, as usual, give preference to questions from people here in the room. It's now my pleasure to hand over to Thomas.
Thank you, Andrew. Good afternoon to everybody and everybody online as well. Very happy to be with you today to present the full year 2018 earnings. When we look at the headlines, I would like to mention four topics to you. The first one is, it was a year of excellent operational performance. You have seen that the entities have really performed well. We have reached a record earnings levels with AXA we have never seen, despite the fact that we have been hit in Q4 by high natural catastrophes, mainly on the XL side. This was the first quarter of XL that we consolidated, and it was an abnormal quarter of natural catastrophes. The integration of XL into AXA to make a new joint force is progressing well. I'll come back to it later. As a result of this, the board of directors has decided yesterday to propose to the shareholders a strong dividend growth of 6%, very much in line with the trend on the underlying earnings. When we look at the underlying earnings in detail, you see an increase from 6 billion last year to 6.2 billion on a like-for-like basis without the FX movement. This, given the fact that we had a reduced ownership in AXA Equitable Holdings. Gérald will come back to it. We have a rough ownership at the closure of 80% in the year of 2018. Secondly, as I mentioned, despite the fact that we had high natural catastrophes in the fourth quarter, mainly coming from XL. The underlying earnings per share is up +3%. There, this is obviously on the basis where the foreign exchange movements are considered. When you look at the adjusted earnings per share, they move up by 1%, and the dividend is moving from 1.26 to 1.34, which is a 6% increase, given a payout ratio at 52%. What is very good for these earnings is that they are very balanced in terms of growth and profitability. We have achieved a 4% growth of revenue to 103 billion for all of AXA, and this growth has very much been fueled by the growth of the preferred segments. Those preferred segments are the commercial line business, the health business, and the protection business. Why have we taken those segments as preferred segments? They are the ones that grow the most, and they are the ones where we are the closest to our customers, because those are inherent risks where people are interested to be helped to reduce their risk and to jointly make a better journey. On the health side, we have achieved a 7% growth, which is very much across a couple countries, and since Jacques is here, certainly AXA France has contributed a lot to this health growth, but also other countries. On the protection side, we have achieved a growth of 3%, again coming from very different jurisdictions and well diversified, and it really shows now that this focus on the preferred segments is really carrying weight, and they can manage to grow and to also differentiate ourselves in those areas. And then the commercial line P&C business that has grown by 5%. This is mainly due to the fact that the AXA entities and certainly the AXA entities in Europe and France have worked very well on growing their franchise more, but also that XL in the last quarter of 2018 has grown by 10%, which is really a remarkable growth. And so this really shows that the preferred segment strategy is the right one. What is important today that when we talk about preferred segments, it is not just a wish that we have going forward. Today, more than 50% of our volumes are already in those preferred segments. And once we have fully exited AXA Equitable in the US, 80% of our volume will be in those preferred segments. When we look at the geographies, and that is another very important thing, the increase of 6% in underlying earnings doesn't come from just one geography. It's very well diversified across the geographies. Everybody has contributed. And what I'm very proud to say is that certainly Europe, if you take France and Europe, those two geographies make two-thirds of AXA's totality. Growing by 10% in underlying earnings is really a great achievement. But we also see that Asia, AXA Equitable, and also the international markets have significantly contributed to these results. AXA XL, as I mentioned, in Q4 has been hit by abnormal catastrophe losses, and this is really why the contribution of AXA XL to the 2018 numbers remains at minus 200 million. This is due to the fact that we had 500 million more losses than we had on a normal basis due to Nat Cat. So essentially what has happened, to make it simple, what you normally experience in 1 year with XL, we have experienced in one quarter, and it was very much an abnormal thing that has happened. How is the integration of XL progressing? And I can tell you that the progress on the integration is moving fast, but that we also on the business momentum see very good news. We've started, firstly, to integrate the reinsurance. So Alban de Mainel and Greg Hendrit have worked a lot. How can we bring AXA and XL together? What are the diversification effects? Because there is a significant diversification by putting the two together, since our main risk used to be European windstorm, and now with a large US exposure, there's a much higher diversification. But we also aligned the joint program to the AXA approach of the risk appetite, which is done, which is implemented, and as we have shown you last year, on a combined basis, which has led to a reduced maximum exposure. Second topic is the commercial approach. We only had a few months after closing. I remind you, the closing was on 10th of September. Nevertheless, in virtually every geography, there was a very strong momentum of, on the one hand, aligning who does what, so that we don't run after the same customers, or that we'd even poach customers from each other, that the focus is very much on how can we get together to new customers. And if you look, and I'm again taking the people that are in the room, Jacques de Peretti, together with the teams of Greg Hendrick, have really achieved to get new customers. The angle was very much around how can we take customers where we never had a chance because we didn't have the US footprint, because we didn't have international exposure, to really create new momentum. They have together created significant business in France. If you take Antimo Perretta, same thing in Europe. We worked a lot in Germany, in Switzerland, to already get new customers. And even in the international markets, certainly in Turkey, we've also managed to have a very high commercial momentum, despite the fact that we only had a very short time together. But we have invested a lot in the cultural integration of both companies, making sure that people get to know each other, making sure that people can work together quickly, and I think that starts to pay off. On the synergies, we are well on the journey. You have seen that we have announced last week to the social partners in Europe the organizational integration in Europe. This is well on the way. We want to do this in a responsible way, that we have always done it at AXA, and today I see no reason why this shouldn't work out in a good space. Lastly, on the asset allocation, we've also started to reallocate the AXA assets. Remember, the AXA assets were invested in a very conservative way because of a relatively limited balance sheet. Here, together with AXA, we've got, on the one hand, means to invest very differently according to the asset allocation of AXA, but also we have a much better access to alternative assets through AXA IM. When we look a little bit forward to what has happened around the beginning of the year, we can say that the Q4 growth, I mentioned it earlier, was very good. 10% revenue growth. Now, if you ask yourself, will that be repeated going on? I would say we have to be cautious on this one. If you take the 10%, there is probably a 5% of recurring in there and a 5% due to some larger contracts. So I would take from this probably, and Greg is nodding, that 5% going forward is a better assumption than 10%. The renewal rates was also positive. So on the insurance side, we managed roughly to put price increases through around 4% with a retention ratio of 90%. On the reinsurance side, it's a little bit lower, around 1.5%, but similar retention rates. So the renewal has gone well, and Greg and his team are working very hard on making sure that the plan that we have for this year will be put in place. Subsequent to that, we have experienced the rating upgrade of AXA XL to AA-, and we have, Greg and his team, have received the various prestigious client recognition event award, JD Powers, again last year in the third row, and they are obviously working very hard that this will become a normal event every year. All of this leads us to the conclusion that we will reaffirm the targets that we have communicated at the Investor Day in November, which is 1.4 billion of euro of underlying earnings by 2020, assuming that we have a normalized net cat experience of 4% of gross earned premiums. We've also been active, apart from obviously integrating XL, in scaling up payer to partner. And I give you two examples out of many examples that we have. One is on the medical teleconsultation. We've spoken quite a lot about this. We are today, certainly in France, the leader in telemedicine. This is fueled, A, by the early investment that we have done. We have two approaches in France. One is through AXA Assistance, the other one is through CARE, which is a venture that we have incubated ourselves. But also the momentum in France, due to the fact that the French state has decided to reimburse teleconsultation as of the 15th of September of last year, has really fueled our efforts. You see here the numbers. We have a massive uptake in those consultations. Those have a very, very high satisfaction ratio, therefore also the repeat usage, and you have more and more physicians coming onto the platform and really wanting to make sure that the availability of medical advice does increase through a better usage of capacities. On the other hand, we take another example from the other end of the planet. In China, we have concluded a cooperation with WeChat. For those of you who are frequently in China, WeChat is the thing in China where everything is done. So we have focused ourselves there on the 140 million travelers that go out of China, and to really focus on the needs of travel insurance, which is a massive space for us, and this good collaboration, which is extremely digital because everything is basically done and settled in a digital way. We will expect a lot from this going forward. All in all, we are well on track with the Ambition 2020. On the underlying earnings per share, if you take the average across the years of beginning from 2016 to now, we are at plus 5%, well in the range of the 3 to 7% that we have indicated on the 21st of June in 2016. On the free cash flow, very similar message. The ambition is to have a cumulative free cash flow of 28 to 32 billion by the end of 2020. When you look at where we are in terms of cumulative free cash flow, we are well on the way with a contribution of the 6.6 billion in 2018. On the adjusted return on equity, we are at 14.4%, again, well in the range of 14 to 16% that we have also increased last November during our Investor Day. And then on the solvency ratio, 193, which is again well situated in the range of 170 to 220, again a range that we have adapted down from 230 to 220 last November. I will now hand over to Gérald Talin, who will go into the detail of the business performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. Good afternoon. So, let's go through the let's go through the underlying earnings. So, underlying earnings are up 6% at 6.2 billion. I should add that it's at constant FX as usual, but this time, so long as we don't consolidate AXA Equitable Holding at 100% anymore, but only at 81%, we should say that this 6% includes the negative impact from this drop of roughly of 19% in the consolidation of AXA Equitable Holding. On the right-hand side, you can notice that across the board, we have good performance in all our markets, and I propose you now to go through these markets, starting first with France. France has a very strong performance, plus 10%, explained by the higher technical margin, and you can see on the top right that our P&C combined ratio improved by 2.3 points, health as well by 0.8 points. Second, we had lower expenses across the board, I would say, that in all the lines of business. And we benefited from higher unit-linked management fees coming from markets being at higher level on average. On the reverse, we have lower investment income, but that's the case in other countries and in line with what we announced before. As a whole, plus 3% in revenues, plus 12% in health, which is strong, plus 5% in protection. Europe now. And in Europe, we are at plus 10 as well, which is, again, a very strong performance with a higher technical margin in different countries, Switzerland, UK and Ireland, Germany and Spain. You can notice here on the right that the health combined ratio is down 1.3 points, which is good. We have a lower corporate tax rate in Switzerland and Belgium. In Switzerland, it went down from 21 to 20%. In Belgium, from 34 to 30%, and like in France, we have lower investment margin. Revenues up 3% on average. Asia now, plus 5%, with a higher technical margin in Japan Life, higher unit-linked management fees in Hong Kong. Again, same reason, it's due to the average level of markets, which was higher in 18 than it was in 17, and higher contribution from China. The whole China increased by 43 million. You can see on the right that we have gross revenues increasing by 4%, and on the bottom right, you can notice that's a point that we mentioned at the last IR day, but it's worthwhile being repeated, that 87% of our business, of our gross revenues, are concentrated in P&C, health and protection, i.e. our priority segments. Let's move to AXA XL. And as mentioned by Thomas, we suffered from two major nat cats in Q4, and that's why on the bar charts here on the left, we try to explain the contribution of -0.2 for the full year 18 of AXA XL. Let's start first on the left, and with AXA XL, with normalized cat nat, I remind you that we consolidate one quarter, the last quarter, Q4, and with normalized cat nat, we should have posted 0.2 billion of underlying earnings. Indeed, due to Hurricane Michael and California wildfires, we have 500 million, to be precise, 540 million of nat cat in excess of normalized level, which means that we reported Q4 2018 loss of 374 minus 0.4 billion euros relative to XL. Then we add 0.1 billion, 141 million of underlying earnings for the full year coming from AXA SA, AXA Corporate Solutions, and AXA Arc, and as a whole, we end up with minus 233 corresponding to the contribution of AXA XL in our 2018 accounts. As explained by Thomas, we have revenues up 10%, excluding two large contracts, we would have been at plus 5. And as mentioned again, we benefited from plus 4% price increase in 2018, and the renewal in January were quite good, with plus 4% in insurance and plus 1.5% in reinsurance. Let's move to the United States now. So plus 4% in underlying earnings contribution in 2018 with different elements. Let me go through these elements. First, higher unit-linked and mutual fund fees, plus 0.1 billion. Then we have a higher investment margin due to the higher level of assets under management, 0.1 billion. Then we have model and assumption change, which are partly offset by lower tax one-off. It's plus 0.3, minus 0.2, and the tax one-offs were last year in 2017, so it's plus 1. So all these three elements correspond to plus 0.3. But this is offset by what I explained at the beginning, meaning that following the IPO and the November sell downs, we reduced our ownership from 100% to 81% on average, because we ended the year at 59%, including the MEB, and roughly 52% excluding the MEB. As a whole, it's a drag of 0.3 billion, so plus 4% on a net basis. APE, plus 6%, which was good, far better in the second half of the year because we achieved an APE level of 9% in H2. As far as AB is concerned, AB revenues plus 5%, and AB management fees increased on average by 0.9 basis points due to a better business mix in favor of with more private clients. Let's move to international now. Strong performance as well, plus 28%, explained by different countries. Mexico first, with higher technical results in P&C and health. Turkey, higher investment income. We have been investing at 8% in Turkey. Russia, strong technical performance and higher volume. AXA Bank Belgium from lower commission and lower expenses. So as a whole, +28%. P&C combined ratio is strong. It's quite high at 100, but keep in mind that in these countries, we are investing at higher rates. We are not in Europe. And you will notice also a strong improvement on the health combined ratio, -2.1 points. Revenues +5%, with a strong +11 in health. And again, on the bottom right corner, we highlight the fact that 88% in international business is 88% of our revenues are in P&C, health, and protection. Last, AXA IM, AXA Investment Managers, so +6% in underlying earnings, with lower financial charges, with some different mix in terms of taxation, which was positive, and higher earnings from Asian JV, which was offset by lower management fees, third-party net inflows +3 billion, and we acquired Quadrant Real Estate, which is a U.S. Alternative asset manager in real estate debt. It adds 8 billion of AUM to AXA IM. I remind you that we are presently, even before this acquisition, with 73 billion of AUM, the number one asset manager in real estate, and just after this acquisition will be at 81 billion. Let's move to the financial performance now, and starting with group earnings. I commented it already, so I move directly to adjusted earnings. As you can see on the third line here, the realized capital gains amounted to 841 million, higher than last year, but the equity market condition in Q4 made that we had to suffer some more impairments in 18, 440 versus 127 a year before, meaning that the net contribution from realized capital gains is 307 instead of 455 one year ago, and we end up with adjusted earnings at 6.5 billion. Let's go through the net income. As we announced it already on the 28th of November, We impaired the goodwill of the U.S. goodwill, 3 billion. So that's the most important part of the 3.1 that you can see at the bottom line, -3.1. We have also some adjustment, change in fair value and Forex. You are used to it. But this year, on top of the freestanding derivatives, which represent a negative contribution of 137, we have the widening of the corporate spreads. You notice that in the last quarter, we had a widening of the corporate spreads, which explains that we have a lot of mutual funds which are marked to market, and this was a contribution of -326. On top of this, we have exceptional and discontinued operation, -451. Most of it is coming from Switzerland with the impairment of intangible, but we got it already in the first half, and integration and restructuring costs. You can imagine that with such a huge transformation in our group, starting first with XL and AXA Equitable Holding, we have a higher cost for restructuring and integration, 332. So in the end, net income is at 2.1 billion. Let's move to this traditional slide on the combined ratio, and our combined ratio, starting first with the current year combined ratio, which would moved up from 97.6 to 99.1. In blue, you have the cost of nat cats. Last year it was 2.5%, this year 4.2, and this compares with the natural levels, which would be around 3%, that we mentioned to you at the last IR day in November. We have prior year reserve development at 2.1 versus 1.2% last year, 2.1 is exactly the same number as for the first half, and we announced to you in August here that we should be in the high end of the range and that we wouldn't be very different. So 2.1, it's in line, and which means that in the end, the all year combined ratio goes up from 96.3 to 97. As you can see on the top right, all year combined ratio excluding XL would have been at 94.9, which would be an improvement of 1.2 points versus full year 17. Last but not least, we increase our guidance on prior year reserve developments from 1 to 2 to 1.5 to 2.5 on the full AXA Group scope. This increase of the guidance relative to prior year reserve release is not something that we decide. It's justified by the fact that, like in June, as you can see on the left, our P&C reserving ratio is moving up. P&C reserving ratio, I remind you, is a technical reserve divided by net earned premium. We are at 213, a very strong level of 213. And the IFRS P&C reserve in excess of the Solvency II belt that you will see also in the own eligible fund report moves up from 5.7 to 7.1 billion. I propose you now to hand over to Alban, who will report on the two next slides relative to the reinsurance and the NatCat cost.
Thank you, Gérald. Good afternoon. So the purpose of this slide is to review the losses that we had in 2018 from natural events and natural catastrophes, coming both from the legacy AXA scope and the legacy XL scope. And there are two main messages from this slide. The first one is 2018 was definitely a heavy year in terms of NatCat, heavier than average. But second, at the end of the day, the deviation that we incurred was very consistent with what we showed you in November 2018, and that's the graph that you see on the right-hand side. So if we go in the detail, on the left-hand side you have the table with all the natural events losses that we had in 2018. It's a bit of a theoretical exercise because it's both AXA and XL along the whole year, whereas we only consolidate XL from Q4 on. So the numbers that you see in the table, the shaded numbers, are the ones that we consolidate and that you will find in our P&L in 2018. So at the top, that's the AXA perimeter. And you will see that the amount that you have here for the AXA perimeter is extremely close, if not equal, to an average amount of natural events losses for a year on AXA, on the AXA side. On the XL side, you have the detail per quarter, and the first three quarters were very much in line, a bit higher than a normal average year for the XL perimeter. But as Thomas and Gérald said, it is the fourth quarter which was highly unusual, because we had in one quarter the equivalent of the full year of CAT losses. And that's that quarter that we have consolidated in our 2018 accounts. And when you do the sum of all those natural losses, net of reinsurance, gross of tax, you come to 2.05 billion of losses. That compares, that's what we showed you in November, to an average year of losses from natural events for the whole AXA plus XL perimeter of 1.5 billion, i.e. an excess of 500 million, which net of tax is 400 million. And 400 million is very consistent to, again, the graph we showed you in November for a 1 in 10 year experience, which is exactly what we had in 2018. So we had that amount of loss, and it was in line with what we could expect from such a year. We show that graph on potential deviations because that's exactly how we think about our risk appetite for natural events when we think of 1 in 20 years losses. I mean, what is the amount, what is the deviation that we could have with a 5% probability? And that's the way, that's what drives the structuring, the design of our reinsurance program. We want to achieve that result. So that's what I'm going to show you on the next slide. That's the way our reinsurance program is designed. So first, now, for 2019, that's the 2019 program, it covers both AXA and XL's exposure to natural events. It's one common program. Second, the preliminary comment on such a program is that you want to be covered for any kind of year, a year where you have a very small number of large events, or like in 2018, where you have a greater number of small to medium-sized events. So that's the way we have designed our program. And it's made of three components. The first one is how we protect our insurance business, AXA and XL. And you see on that graph that we protect that insurance business through per-event protection. And we buy, so you see European windstorm, North America hurricane, North America earthquake, and our other perils. You see the attachment points and the capacity we buy. We buy a capacity so that we are protected for those perils up until a 1 in 200 year event. But that's the that's on the insurance side. We protect our reinsurance business through cat bonds and alternative capital. And the third component is the aggregate. And that's an absolutely key component of our reinsurance structure, because that's what helps us achieve the target I showed you on the previous slide, which is not to lose more than 500 million net of tax with a 5% probability. So how does it work? When you look at the shaded areas of the first two components, insurance and reinsurance, we put all those amounts, the shaded, i.e. the retentions that we have, or potentially also the excess losses that we would have above our protection, we put all that in the same basket, subject to a 50 million deductible per event, insurance and reinsurance. When that basket reaches 1.45 billion, then everything above that is reinsured. It's ceded to reinsurance, subject again to 50 million deductible per new event. So with that, you see that we are protected against extremely large events, through the towers, the first that you have on insurance, or a large number of small to medium events through the aggregate. And that's how we achieve the deviation and the risk appetite that I showed you on the previous slide. Gérald.
Thank you, Albert. So moving back to the balance sheet, and to this traditional slide on our investment portfolio. So we are managing our general accounts. Invested assets correspond to 615 billion, mostly invested in govies and corporate bonds. And you can see at the bottom left that the life and savings yield on assets stabilized at 3.1%. and dropped on the PNC side from 3.3 to 3.2. Keep in mind as well that we have been investing in different countries where the rates are much higher than in Europe. We have been investing on the right-hand side. We have been investing 70 billion in fixed income, 57% in investment-grade credit rating single A, 28 in govies and sovereign, average rating AA, and 7% in ABS, investment grade, and below investment grade credit is limited to 7%. As a whole, we have been investing, as you can see at the bottom right, at 2.5%. Here, we are dealing with investment margins, so we are quite happy to announce you that our investment margin stabilized, roughly speaking. We moved up from 69 basis points to 70 basis points. I remind you that when we presented our plan in June 2016, we assumed that our investment margin would drop to 55 to 65 basis points. Same quite good pattern as well on the PNC yield, because the PNC yield dropped only by 8 basis points, where we're expecting a drop between 10 and 20 basis points. On the left-hand side, you can see that our spread above guarantee is still increasing, still improving, be it on the new business or on the in-force, confirming that, as I said in previous meetings, guaranteed rates are no more a problem, no more an issue at all at AXA. Shareholders' equity moved down from 69.6 to 62.4. You can see on the right-hand side what are the main elements explaining it. Keep in mind that due to the equity drop, there is a change in net unrealized capital gains, OCI, minus 3.9 billion. We have the dividend that was paid, 3 billion, and the impact of AXA Equitable IPO, minus 2.8, plus the net income, positive 2.1%. The adjusted ROE, which is calculated on the average shareholders' equity, is at 14.4% versus 14.5 1 year ago. Here we have the Solvency II ratio is at 193, well within our 190 to 200 guidance that we gave you as soon as in March when we announced the XL transaction, and of course well within the 170 to 220 target range. Debt gearing 32%, in line with our guidance, and I repeat and I confirm that the target range by 2020 will be between 25 and 28%. Here, traditional slides on Solvency II. So you have the roll forward with starting with 205 last year, operating return plus 24, dividend payment minus 12, market impact, and of course the equity markets, and minus 4 points, US IPO plus 13, and sub-debt XL acquisition minus 33 points. We end up with a solvency level of 193, and you can see the sensitivities, which are not fundamentally different from previously. Last point, it's on cash flows, and we have a strong cash flow generation. It's 6.6 instead of 6.3 billion 1 year ago. And if I exclude the 2.6 billion, you remember the 2.6 billion correspond to the restructuring of the US debt. Excluding this, we have 5 billion of remittance. 5 billion divided by 6.6, it's a 76% remittance ratio within the guidance of 75 to 85%. Now I hand over to Thomas for the conclusion.
Thank you very much, Gerald. As a conclusion, 2018, with all the changes on transformation, has been a very pivotal year for AXA. We started in 2017 to implement a new organization that was more decentral, based on the principles of simplicity and empowerment. You can see that this organization is bearing fruit, because all the geographies have really increased their operational capabilities, have really delivered an excellent operational performance. And at the same time, we have started shifting the portfolio significantly towards technical risks through the significant transformational leap AXA Equitable Holding against XL Group. I remind you again, when we started this journey right after the financial crisis, AXA was focused 80% on life and savings. When we have completed that journey on this picture and fully divested from AXA Equitable, we are focused on 80% of technical risk, P&C business, health and protection. For 2019, our priorities are very clear, and I repeat them again because it's good to remind ourselves of them. After these movements in 2018, our focus is one, to continue successfully the integration of AXA XL. Secondly, to continue the sell down of AXA Equitable Holdings, and subsequently, thirdly, to reduce our debt gearing to the range indicated to you in November, 25% to 28%. At the same time, continuing our successful journey on delivering Ambition 2020, but also making sure that the elements we presented in November, certainly on Asia, to accelerate in Asia, and also to continue to scale up the innovations that we have put in place, where we now have decided what we are going to do going forward. Thank you very much, and we are now moving to the Q&A session. As Andrew said at the beginning, we give priority to the room, but we will hopefully have sufficient time to also get to all questions on the line. Who would like to start? Farooq, you were the first one with your arm up.